valley to help draw out some of the poison. They untied his hands, and it took Rafe, Jeb, and Sven working together to get Grizz to his feet. Several curses later, they finally loaded him onto his horse. They were no longer worried about him making sudden moves. Caden was still forced to walk ahead of us. His status hadn't changed. Sven rode close to Grizz, and when he teetered in his saddle, Sven reached out and grabbed his arm to steady him. Because of the delays with Grizz and Caden joining our caravan, we didn't reach the valley floor until dusk. Caden had been walking for 5 hours now with his hands tied behind his back. I saw the fatigue in his steps, but strangely, instead of sympathy, my own anger and fears resurfaced. How many months had I been in that same position, a half-starved prisoner, humiliated and afraid, uncertain if I'd live another day? He hadn't suffered half as much as I had. Yet. The unsettling difference was, he had come looking for this trouble. Why was he really here? We rode down the main avenue, surrounded by the eerie, boxy giants. Many of the ancient walls and roofs were still intact. There was a quick scramble to choose a suitable shelter, which meant one that could be defended, just in case. Rafe and Tavish conferred, and a ruin was decided upon. We all gathered armfuls of what loose and dried branches we could find and filed into the cavernous dwelling, taking the horses with us. It probably could have held an entire regiment. As soon as a fire was roaring, I prepared a poultice, helping myself to whatever was in Caden's saddlebag. Tavish sharpened his knife and work began on Grizz. Our shelter rose several stories, and thick slabs of stone that had fallen from higher places littered the floor around us. Grizz was laid out on one of them. As weak as he was, and, now it seemed, slightly delirious, it took all four of them to hold him down while Tavish cleaned the wound. Caden was ordered to sit in an open area far from the gear and fire. I sat nearby on a large block of rock, guarding him, a sword across my lap. A strange feeling knotted inside me, like a meal that wasn't eaten properly, rushed and uncomfortable. I noted his arms, still bound behind his back. A sour taste rose in my throat. He was the prisoner now, like the prisoner he had made me. All his actions I had sloughed off and forgotten, because I knew that in some twisted way he had also saved my life, were suddenly as fresh and hurtful as if they had happened yesterday. I felt the rope cutting into my wrists and the suffocating terror of trying to breathe beneath a black hood he had pulled over my head. I felt the shame of crying as my face was ground into the sand. My emotions weren't blinding and explosive as they had been back then, but were now tight and contained, like an animal pacing behind the cage of my ribs. Caden met my stare, his eyes revealing nothing. Cold, calm, dead. I wanted to see terror in them. Fear. Just as he had surely seen it in mine when I discovered he wasn't the pelt trader he had claimed to be, but an assassin sent to kill me. "How does it feel?" I asked. He acted as if he didn't know what I was talking about. I tried to goad his fear to the surface. How does it feel to have your hands tied behind your back, to be dragged across the wilderness, not knowing what will happen to you? I forced a long and luxurious smile as if I was enjoying the turn of our fortunes. How does it feel to be a prisoner, Caden?
I'm not fond of it, if that's what you want to hear.
My eyes stung. I wanted far more than that. What I want is to watch you beg for your release, to desperately bargain for your life like I had to. He sighed. That's all I get? A sigh? I know that you suffered, Leah, but I did what I thought was right at the time. I can't take back what I've done. I can only try to make amends. I choked on the word. I knew bitterly the cost of trying to make amends, and how pathetically they could fall short. When Greta died, I thought it was all my fault as I tried to make amends, but now I realized I hadn't even known the rules of the game I'd been drawn into, nor all the players, like the traitors back in Civica. My amends would have changed nothing. The lies went on and on, just like Caden's lies. "You lied to me about the footbridge," I said. "It was there all along."
"Yes, 4 miles north of the Brightmist Gate. It's not there anymore. We cut it down."
4 miles? We could have gotten there on foot. I leaned back on the rock. "So what cunning story did you spin to get them to spare your lives? I'm sure it was an excellent one. You're the master of deceit, after all." He studied me, his brown eyes as dark and deep as night.
"No," he said. "Not anymore. I think that title has fallen to you."
I looked away. It was a title I would gladly embrace if it could get me what I needed. I stared at the firelight dancing across the steel of the sword, both edges equally sharp and gleaming. "I did what I had to do."
"All those things you told me? Only what you had to do?"
I stood, the sword still in my hand. I wasn't going to get wrangled down a path of guilt.
"Who sent you, Caden?" I demanded. "Why are you here? Was it Malik?"
A disgusted smirk twisted his lip.
"Say it," I said.
"In case you hadn't noticed, Leah, we were outnumbered that day on the terrace. We barely escaped with our lives. Fywell died. So did the other guards who fought by our sides. Grizz and I managed to fight our way down to a portal on the lowest level, and we sealed the door behind us. From there, we hid in various abandoned passages for 3 days. When they couldn't find us, they assumed we had escaped on another raft."
"And just how would you know what they assumed? Or that there was a squad sent after us?"
"One of the passages we hid in was next to Sanctum Hall. We heard the Komazar shouting orders, one of which was to find you."
My knees turned to water.
I stared at Caden, the cavern suddenly spinning with shadows. "But he's dead."
"He could be by now. He was weak, but Ulrich's called for healers. They were caring for him."
My legs gave way, and I dropped to the floor. I saw the Komazar's eyes drilling into me, the dragon refusing to die.
"Leah," Caden whispered, "untie me. Please. It's the only way I can help you."
He scooted closer until our knees almost touched. I tried to focus, but instead I was smelling the salty blood that had spilled to the terrace, seeing the shine of Aster's eyes, hearing the chants of the crowd, feeling the icy grip of the knife as I pulled it from its sheath, the day coming to life again, the disbelief that had swept over me, the seconds that changed everything, the Komazar crumpling to the ground, and my naive hope swelling that it could really be over. Words, dry as chalk, lay on my tongue. I swallowed, searching for saliva, and finally managed a hoarse whisper.
"What happened to the others, Caden? Calantha, Ephira, the servants?"
I rattled off another half-dozen names of those who had been sympathetic to me, those who had looked at me with hopeful eyes. They had expected something from me that I didn't deliver. A promise they were still waiting for.
His brow furrowed. "Most likely dead. Clans who cheered your succession in the square suffered losses. It was a message. I don't know the numbers, but at least 100 were slaughtered. All of Aster's clan, including Ephira."
My thoughts whirled. "Yvette and Zakiya?" I asked, not sure if I really wanted to know the answer.
And Eben?
I don't know.
But the tone of his voice held little hope. He glanced at my lap. The sword still lay across it. Part of me wanted to untie him, to believe every word he had told me, that he was only here to help us escape. But Rafe's story didn't match Caden's. Rafe had seen the Komazar dead. He'd told Sven he'd seen the corpse dragged away. The cavern shuddered with a sudden, bellowing scream. I heard Sven curse and the shouts of the others trying to hold Grizz down. The worried flutter of birds roosting high above us sent sandy debris raining down. Caden looked up as if something else might lurk in the dark floors above us.
Untie me, Leah, before it's too late. I promise you, I'm not lying.
I stood, dusting off my trousers, a familiar ache blooming in my chest. Venda always comes first. His long-ago words burned bright. If any words were true in Caden's heart, I knew it was those. I lifted the sword and pressed its sharp edge to his neck. You may have saved my life, Caden, but you haven't yet earned my trust. I care about all these men I am traveling with. I won't have them harmed. His eyes smoldered with frustration. Things were different now. There was far more at stake than just my life and saving it. There was everyone I loved in Morrigan, everyone I cared about in Venda, every one of the men in this company I rode with. They were threaded into every thought and movement I made. They had to become part of his thoughts, too. He had to care like I did. Venda couldn't come first for him anymore. Even I couldn't come first. I lay curled in Rafe's arms, exhaustion overtaking both of us. I had asked him again about the Komazar, telling him what Caden said. He told me not to worry, that the Komazar was dead. But I saw his hesitation this time before he answered, the slack in his jaw, the barest stalled moment that told me what I needed to know. He was lying. He hadn't seen the body dragged away. I wasn't sure if I should be angry with him or grateful. I knew he was only trying to calm my fears, but I didn't want to be calmed. I wanted to be prepared. I didn't push the point. Rest was more imperative to our survival. His eyes were lined with fatigue. We were nestled in a dark nook of the ruin that afforded us only a small amount of privacy. A few fallen slabs separated us from the others and the glow of the firelight. Orin had first watch. I could hear him pacing on the gravel floor just feet away. Maybe it was the rustling of birds somewhere high above us, or the distant howling of wolves that kept him on edge. Or the fact that the assassin now slept among us. Maybe that was why none of us could sleep. Only Grizz seemed to find deep slumber, swept away into some dark, dream-filled world. Tavish said that if he made it through the night, he might have a chance. There was nothing more any of us could do.
Chapter 14. Caden.
Orin's pacing was driving me mad. It made it difficult to hear other noises, things I should listen for. I rolled to my side, trying to reach the rope around my feet, but the knots were out of my reach. My shoulder ached from lying for hours in the same position. For a moment, when I had told her about the Komazar, I'd thought Leah would untie me. I saw the struggle behind her eyes. I saw our connection rekindle. But then a wall came down. This was a harder Leah than I had known, fierce and unbending. But I knew what had been done to her, and the horrors she had witnessed. How does it feel? The rope dug into my wrists, numbed my ankles. Familiar, I had wanted to answer. Being a prisoner feels familiar. It was all I had ever been. My past held on to me today as strongly as it had when I was a child, my choices still limited, my steps still shackled. My life had been patched together with lies from the day I was born. How does it feel? Old. I was tired of the lies.
Chapter 15.
The end was in sight. Just ahead, the foothills were stepping back, and the last of the ruins were melting into the earth. The majesty of the ancients bowed yet again to time, which proved itself the ultimate victor. I was relieved to see the first glimpses of open grasslands up ahead, yellow with winter. The valley had twisted on far longer than I had anticipated, though some of the length may have had to do with the company I rode between. Even when sharp words weren't bandied between Rafe and Caden, I felt the blows of their dark glances. If ever there were three mismatched riders, it was us, the Crown Prince of Dalbrek, the Assassin of Venda, and the Fugitive Princess of Morrigan. Sons and daughter of three kingdoms, each bent on the domination of the other two. If our situation hadn't been so dire, I would have thrown back my head and laughed at the irony. It seemed whether I was at the Citadel or in the far-flung wilderness, I was ever caught in the middle of opposing forces. Grizz had not only made it through the first night, but had woken up hungry. Tavish said nothing, but I saw his relief and maybe some of his lost pride restored. Each day Grizz grew stronger, and now, after 3 days, his color was ruddy and the fever gone. Tavish asked me about the Thanis poultice I applied daily. I shared what I knew about the purple weed, including its brief but deadly golden phase, when it seeded. He took the pouch that I offered him, noting he would avoid the golden flowers if he found any. Grizz told him not to worry, that he wouldn't find any Thanis here. It grew only in Venda. I wished now I had some of those golden seeds, if only to plant a few in Birdie's garden. Caden was finally allowed to ride his horse. His hands were still tied, but at least in front of him now. The squad he had claimed was hunting us down hadn't materialized, but the possibility still kept us all on edge. I believed Caden's story. I was sure the others did too, though Rafe would admit to nothing. The fact that he let Caden ride was admission enough. He wanted to get to the safety of the outpost as soon as possible. Only half a day's ride to go, he had estimated when we packed up this morning. Sven concurred. The Marabella outpost was the closest point of safety. It was named after one of their long-ago queens. Rafe said there were more than 400 soldiers stationed there, and it was easily defendable. Once there, we could rest, stock up on supplies, change out our horses, and continue on our journey with additional soldiers. With the Komazar dead, I hadn't felt it necessary to return to Civica immediately, but now with even the slim possibility of him being alive and able to carry out his plan to annihilate Morrigan, the urgency returned. As much as I delighted in the idea of having several days of rest with Rafe, we couldn't stay long at the outpost. Morrigan had to be warned not only about the Komazar, but also the traitors who aided him. Rafe took a long swig of water from his canteen. "Be sure to drink, Leah," he said absently as his eyes scanned the landscape ahead. He never rested. I wasn't sure he even slept most nights. The slightest noise roused him. By bringing Caden and Grizz into our company, he only had more to juggle, and the exhaustion showed on his face. He needed a good night's sleep, one where he didn't carry the weight of everyone's safety on his shoulders. He turned to me and smiled unexpectedly, as if he knew I was watching him. "Almost there." The icy blue of his gaze lingered, igniting a fire in my belly that spread down to my toes. His eyes turned reluctantly back to the trail ahead, his guard back up. We weren't there yet. He continued to talk as he watched our path.
First thing I'm going to do is take a hot bath, then burn these filthy barbarian clothes.
I heard Caden pull in a seething breath. Behind us, there was banter on the amenities of the outpost.
First thing I'm going to do is break into Colonel Bodine's red eye,
Sven said cheerfully, as if he was tasting the burning brew in his throat already.
And I'll lift a few with you,
Grizz added. Bodine keeps a fetching pantry, too, Orin added admiringly. Barbarian or not, the clothes served you well enough, Caden shot at Rafe. You were lucky to have them. Rafe leveled a cool stare over his shoulder at Caden.
So I was, he answered. Just as you were lucky that I didn't part your head from your neck when we parried in Sanctum Hall.
Only stewing silence was returned by Caden. But then I noticed there was a strange brooding silence everywhere. My fingertips tingled. A sudden pall had fallen, as if someone had boxed my ears. Blood rushed to my temples. I turned my head, listening. And then, from somewhere far away, the satisfied purr of an animal. You are ours. I looked at Rafe. Movement around me was drawn and slow, and the small hairs on my neck lifted. Stop, I said softly. Rafe pulled his horse to a halt, his eyes already sharp and alert.
Hold back, he said to the others.
Our group of eight clung together uncertainly, a tight knot in the silence. Eight pairs of eyes searched the nearby ruins and the narrow spaces between. Nothing stirred. I shook my head, thinking I had alerted everyone needlessly. We were all on edge, and tired. And then a shrill howl split the air. We spun to look behind us, our horses jostling and prancing for position in our constricted circle. At the end of the long road we had just come down, four horsemen sat poised, all equally spaced as if ready for a parade, or an advancement.
Ratan, Caden said. They're here.
They were too far away to identify, but they clearly wanted us to see them.
Only four, Rafe asked. There's more, somewhere.
Orin and Jeb unhooked their bows from their packs. Rafe and Sven slowly drew their swords. I swept aside my cloak and pulled both my knife and sword free.
Why are they just sitting there?
Another piercing cry rang out, bouncing off ruins and raising goose flesh on my arms. We turned the other direction to find what was almost a mirror image of what lay behind us. Six horsemen, but these were much closer. They sat like evenly spaced statues, cold and planted as if nothing could get past them.
Bloody hell, Sven said under his breath. Untie me, Caden whispered. Now!
What are they waiting for? Rafe asked. Her,
Grizz answered.
They'd rather take her alive than drag her back dead, Caden explained. They're giving you a chance to give her up before they kill us.
Orin grunted. They're assuming we'll be the ones who are killed. It was a reasonable assumption. I recognized two of them by their long white hair. Traherne and Ivor, the vilest Ratan. We were outnumbered, their 10 healthy, well-armed men against our 8, 3 of whom were injured, including myself. Rafe glanced to either side, looking at the crumbled ruins, but it was apparent that none offered quick, defensible positions.
If you make the slightest move, they'll charge, Caden warned.
Anything else we should know?
Rafe asked.
You don't have much time. They know we're talking.
Keystone formation, Rafe ordered, keeping his voice low and calm. We take the 6 first, then Jeb and Tavish double back with me. Only when I give the word. Grizz, cut Caden loose on my signal.
Orin, right, Tavish said. Jeb, left.
The horses stamped, sensing the danger.
"Hold steady," Sven whispered.
They worked together like a smooth machine, exchanging a few more words, their chiseled focus remaining on the rattan as they spoke. Rafe finally turned to me. His weariness vanished, his eyes fierce with battle.
"Leah, make a show of putting your sword away. You're going to move forward as if we're giving you up."
He turned to look at the riders behind us, then back to me.
"Slowly. Ahead 5 lengths, no more. Then stop. Ready?"
His eyes cut into me, a beat longer than we had time for.
"Trust me. It will be all right. I love you."
100 things shining in his gaze that he didn't have time to say. I nodded and moved forward. Time turned to syrup, every hooffall amplified, 1 length becoming 1 mile. I steeled my eyes on the rattan ahead, as if that would keep them in place. They didn't move, waiting for me to come all the way to them. Yes, Treherne and Ivar, but now I could also recognize Baruch, Ferris, and Gear, only cruel guards before, now elevated to ride with the rattan. The 6th one I didn't know. But Malik wasn't among them. If he wasn't here, maybe he was the one ruling Venda now. I had sheathed my sword as Rafe had ordered, but the knife was still in my hand, hidden behind the pommel of the saddle. 2 lengths. Their horses pranced, impatient. 3 lengths. They looked between one another, victorious. 4 lengths. I was close enough to see their faces. Each gleamed with satisfaction. Treherne moved forward to meet me. Another step. 5 lengths. I stopped my horse.
"Keep coming, girl!" he called.
I didn't move. A question crossed his face only briefly before the battle cry of a warrior prince rent the air. The ground shook with the rumble of hooves. Flesh and shadows flew past me. The rattan raced forward to meet them, Treherne leading the pack. Rafe maneuvered in front of me to block him. Swords flashed and axes swung. My horse whirled in the confusion, rearing back. I worked to regain control. Arrows flew, their smooth hiss singing past my ears. The rattan, who had been behind, now raced toward us too, but then Rafe and Tavish doubled back, arrows flying in the other direction, a circle of battle with me at the center. Dust rose in clouds, and the death ring of swords clanged against the air. Grizz swung mightily, even with his weak side, bringing down Ivar. Caden fought beside him, his hands free for the first time in days. Blood spattered them both, but I wasn't sure whose blood it was. Caden whirled on his horse, killing Baruch with a vicious stab to his throat, pulling the sword free and, in the same motion, blocking an attack from Ferris. Gear advanced on Sven from behind, and I threw my knife, hitting him dead center in the back of his neck. I circled, the melee coming from all sides, and swung my sword into another rattan as he attacked Orin. The blade glanced off his leather armor, but it was enough of a distraction that Orin was able to knock him from his horse. I drew a 2nd knife from my belt, but then, hidden in the ruins, a flash. Color. Something else turning my eye. Movement. Charging. A horse raced forward, with Ulrichs guiding it toward me. I raised my sword, but he was already upon me, his horse's side ramming my horse, the impact sending my animal stumbling and the sword flying. His horse was still butting mine, not giving me time to reposition or gain control, every part of us, saddle and stirrup, seeming tangled. I still had the knife tight in my grip, and I slashed out at his arm, meeting only with a leather wrist cuff. I slashed out again for something more vital, but he blocked me with his sword and yanked me onto his horse with his other hand in a single violent pull. The pommel of his saddle slammed into my stomach like a fist, punching my breath away, punching over again and over again as I straddled the horse on my stomach. I couldn't breathe, but I knew he was riding away. We were disappearing into the ruins. I tried to force air back into my lungs, to roll away, free the arm pinned beneath me. I reached desperately for something to hit him with. Where was my knife? Air. I needed air. His fingers threaded through my hair, yanking my head back.
All I need is your head, princess. The choice is yours. Submit to me or lose it.
I gasped, my lungs finally filling, and I pulled my pinned arm free, something hard still in my grasp. I slashed upward. He struck at my hand, sending the knife flying, but it was too late. The blade had left a spurting line of blood from his collarbone to his ear. He roared with pain, grabbing my arm with one hand and lifting his sword with the other. I had no leverage to move, no way to push off, no way to protect my neck from his blade. And then he was gone. Gone. Ulrich's crumpled body lay on the ground. His head tumbled down the incline into a rock. Wraith circled around, sheathing his bloody sword. He rode over, scooping me around the waist and pulling me sideways onto his saddle. His heart pounded against my shoulder. His breaths were ragged from the exertion of battle. I turned to look at him. Smeared blood and sweat streamed from his face. He pulled me to him, holding me so tight there was no chance of me slipping off. "You're all right," he said into my hair. My words choked in the back of my throat. "Rafe," was all I could say. His hands stroked my head, crushed my hair, his breaths calming as he held me. "You're all right," he repeated. This time it seemed more to himself than to me. The Ratan were dead, but our group had sustained more injuries. When we got back to the others, Tavish had a gash on his forehead that he waved away as unimportant, wrapping his head with a strip of cloth to keep the blood out of his eyes. Jeb was lying on the ground, his face wet and waxy. My heart clutched, but Caden assured me it wasn't fatal. When Jeb's horse was struck by the blow of a sword, he'd been thrown and his shoulder was dislocated. Jeb shuddered as they cut away his shirt so they could see his injury.
"That was my favorite shirt, you savages," he said, trying to smile, but his breaths were strained and only agony registered on his face.
I dropped to his side, brushing back his hair.
"I'll buy you a dozen more," I said.
"Crevasse linen," he specified. "It's the finest."
"Crevasse it is."
He grimaced and looked at Rafe.
"Get on with it."
We all stared at his shoulder. It was more than just a dislocation. Something had ripped inside. The skin swelled purple and blue, and the previous injury that Tavish had stitched was bleeding again. Tavish nodded at Orin and Caden. They held him down while Rafe rotated Jeb's arm off to the side, upward slightly, then pulled. Jeb's scream was full and guttural, echoing through the valley. My stomach turned. Afterward, his eyes remained closed, and I thought he had passed out. But when his breath returned, he looked up at me and said,
"You didn't hear that."
I wiped his brow. "I heard nothing but savages ripping off a perfectly fine shirt." We made a sling for his shoulder from a dead rattan's bedroll, and Jeb was helped onto one of the Venden horses, his own now dead in the road and stripped of its belongings. We were on our way again, all of us spattered in blood, Grizz favoring his wounded side again, making me fear he had pulled his stitches loose. The dead rattan lay scattered, a gruesome scene of butchered men, some of them stripped of their needed linens. As we took the supplies we needed from their dead bodies, I felt like a scavenger, the kind Gudrell and Morrigan had feared. I prayed there were no more rattan lying in wait in another ruin. It seemed we would never be out of this hell.
"I cry out, and fall to my knees, unable to go on, weeping for the dead, weeping for the cruelties, and a whisper calls to me from far away. You are strong, stronger than your pain, stronger than your grief, stronger than them. And I force myself to my feet again. The Lost Words of Morrigan. Chapter 16. Rafe.
I couldn't banish the sight of the barbarian yanking Leah's head back by her hair, his sword rising, and in the flash of that moment I saw the bounty hunter in Terevin again, his knife held to her neck. But this time, I knew she was going to die. I was too far away. Terror had gripped me. I would never make it in time. But then, somehow I did. Somehow I was there, my reach longer, my advance faster than it had ever been before. She rode with me now, settled in my saddle against me. When I told the others that she would ride with me, I didn't explain why. No one asked. The extra horses were tethered behind us. We'd only been back on the trail for an hour when we saw dust in the distance, and then a squad. They spread out. They had spotted us too. Devil's hell. How much more could we take on? There were at least 30 of them, and we were stuck on a wide-open plain, the ruins far behind us. I raised my hand, and our convoy stopped. I heard the rumble of murmurs behind me. Blessed gods, Jabave, mother of demons, what do we do now? The order to turn around and try to make it back to the ruins was on my lips when I spotted something in the dust cloud. Your Highness, Sven said, impatient for an order. Something blue and black. A banner, I called. They're ours. Shouts of relief erupted. But then we all saw the same thing as they galloped closer. Lances pointed, weapons drawn. There was no mistaking their intent as they charged toward us. They didn't know who we were. We waved our arms, but they didn't slow. Something white, I yelled. By the time they realized who we were, at least one of us would be impaled. But there wasn't a scrap of white among us to wave. Our cloaks, Leah said, and then louder, our cloaks are Venden. The saddle blankets we wore were woven in Venden colors and patterns. As far as they were concerned, we were a barbarian squad. Who else would be out here? Shed the blankets, I yelled. The patrol slowed, as if they were conferring, but their weapons were still aimed. When they were within shouting distance, we identified ourselves, with our hands in the air, as Dalbrick soldiers. They cautiously approached, then stopped 6 lengths away, still poised to run us through. I ordered everyone to dismount and to keep their hands in sight and off their weapons. I helped Leah down, then Sven and I stepped forward. You bloody fools, Sven yelled. Don't you know your own prince when you see him? Between our grime and blood-spattered clothes, I wouldn't have expected anyone to recognize us. The captain squinted. Colonel Havistrom? Sven? I heard a collective sigh from the others. My muscles went slack for the first time in weeks. We were almost home. That's right, you knucklehead, Sven said, his tone full of relief. And as much as I look like a stray dog, Prince Jackson, I added. The captain looked at me strangely, then glanced at the soldiers on either side of him. He dismounted and stepped forward to meet me. His expression was grim. Captain Azia, he said, introducing himself. The entire Dalbrick army has been searching for you. Something about his expression was all wrong. And then, falling down on one knee, he added, Your Majesty.
Chapter 17.
The moment stretched as long and fragile as spider silk blown taut in the wind. Longer. Impossible. Sven's eyes watered. Tavish looked down. Orin and Jeb exchanged a knowing glance. Even Caden and Grizz froze, though I wasn't sure if they understood what the captain's words meant. The young soldiers on either side of the captain looked confused. Even they hadn't known. A fierce ache gripped my heart as everyone waited to see what Rafe would do. A cruel moment. But it was his and his alone to finish. Your Majesty. I only had a crescent view of Rafe's face, but it was enough. He stared down at the captain as if he didn't really see him. Only the clenching of his jaw, still streaked with dirt and blood, revealed anything. And the slow curling of his fist. Every small, controlled gesture told me the news hit him hard, but he was well-trained. Prepared. Sven had probably been preparing him for this moment since he was a child. Rafe would do what was required of him, just as he had when he came to Morrigan to marry me. After two measured breaths, he nodded at the captain. Then you've done your duty. A prince, in the turn of a moment and a few words, was now a king. Rafe motioned for the captain to rise and said quietly, When? It was only then that Sven put a hand on Rafe's shoulder. The captain hesitated, looking at the rest of us, unsure if he could speak freely. Rafe eyed Caden and Grizz, then asked Tavish and Orin to take them for a walk. He may have trusted them with a sword, but not his kingdom's secrets. It happened weeks ago, the captain explained, only a few days after the queen had died. The inner court was reeling, and it had been decided to keep the king's death a secret. With no one on the throne and the crown prince missing, the cabinet wanted to hold back the news from neighboring kingdoms that Dalbrek was without a monarch. They explained the king's lack of public appearances as mourning for the queen. The cabinet ministers ruled discreetly, while a desperate search was launched for the prince. With top officers missing along with him, they assumed he was alive, but ensnared in an unauthorized but well-deserved retaliation against Morrigan. The whole kingdom was still enraged over the breaking of the contract, and they wanted retribution. When they searched Sven's office, they'd found messages sent to Sven from the prince about a meeting in Luisaveke, but could turn up nothing else besides Sven's orders to Tavish, Orin, and Jeb to meet there, too. They feared they'd all been found out and thrown into one of Morrigan's prisons, but careful inquiries turned up nothing. It was as if they had all vanished into thin air, but hope was never lost. Their skills were known. When the captain finished, it was Rafe's turn to explain. "I'll fill you in as we ride," Rafe told him, saying we were tired, hungry, and some of us in need of medical care. "And those two?" the captain asked, nodding toward Grizz and Caden in the distance. The corner of Rafe's mouth pulled. I tensed, waiting to see what he would call them. Barbarians? Prisoners? He seemed unsure himself. I prayed he wouldn't say Ratan or assassin.
Vendans, he answered, whom we can moderately trust for now. We'll keep a close watch on them.
Moderately trust? They had just helped save our lives, for the second time. But I knew they'd done it not for Rafe's benefit or Dalbrek's, only mine, so I reluctantly understood his caution, too. The captain's expression turned hard, and a deep line creased between his brows. A platoon of ours has been missing now for weeks. We've been hunting down men like...
The platoon is dead,
Rafe said flatly. All of them. I saw their bloody weapons and valuables brought to the Komazar. Those two weren't involved. As I said, I'll explain as we ride.
The captain paled. An entire platoon dead? But he made no further comment, complying with Rafe's wish to explain as they rode. He shot a last sideways glance at me, but was too polite to ask who I was. He'd surely seen me riding in front of Rafe on his horse, and probably assumed something unsavory. I didn't want to embarrass Rafe or the captain with the truth at this point. We'd all heard what he said about the rage they still nursed toward Morrigan, but as the captain returned to his horse, his soldiers eyed me with curiosity, too. With the remnants of my clan dress and my skin still spattered with blood, I surely looked like a wild barbarian in their eyes. What on earth was their king doing riding with me? The glances and stares didn't escape Rafe. He looked down and shook his head. Yes, he had much to explain. I didn't get even a passing moment to hold Rafe, to tell him how sorry I was, to convey any kind of sorrow at all. The convoy resumed immediately. Maybe it was just as well for Rafe to have a chance to absorb this news without words from me stirring his emotions further. I had met his father once, briefly. He was an old man walking up the steps of the citadel, a limp in his gait, and he required assistance. That sight had sent terror pulsing through me. He was old enough to be my father's father. I had assumed the worst about the age of the prince, though I knew now it wouldn't have mattered how old or young the Dalbrecht king would have been. My terror was rooted in the reality of this man arriving in Civica to sign marriage agreements. At the sight of him, I saw my choices being crushed, my voice being silenced forever in a foreign kingdom I knew little about. I was property to be bartered like a wagon full of wine, though perhaps less precious and certainly far less enjoyed. Hush, Arabella. What you have to say doesn't matter. I knew this king had to have some redeeming quality for Rafe to love him and for Sven to tear up at the news, but I couldn't forget that this king also told his son, "Take a mistress after the wedding if she doesn't suit you." Only for Rafe's sake could I mourn him. With 30 soldiers to escort us now, I had suggested I ride my own horse farther behind in our caravan. I knew it would be a more comfortable ride for all concerned if I wasn't there as Rafe and Sven tried to explain where they had been for the last several months. How angry would Dalbrecht be that I was the cause of their prince's disappearance? I'd already heard the tone with which the captain said, "Morrigan," as if it were a poison to be spat out. The wind picked up, cool and crisp. I missed Rafe's warmth at my back, the comfort of his arms around me, the nudge of his chin at the side of my head. My hair stank of oil, smoke, and dirt, even the river that had nearly killed us both. And yet he had nuzzled close, as if it smelled of flowers, as if he didn't care if I was or ever had been a proper princess. Rafe seemed shocked. I take it the king's poor health was one of his lies, too? I hadn't noticed that Caden had come up alongside me. He had probably been tallying the lies ever since I left him on the terrace. I looked at him, his shoulders slumped, spent. But the weariness I saw in his eyes came from someplace else, from words that had carved out pieces of his flesh, one calculated day after another. My words. I scrambled for a defense, but there was no more anger in his expression, and that left me hollow. It gave me nothing to push back against. I had no game pieces left to play. I'm sorry, Caden. His lip lifted in a pained expression, and he shook his head,
as if to ward off any more apologies from me. "I've had time to think about it," he said. "There's no reason I should have expected the truth from you. Not when I was the one to lie and betray you first back in Terravin." It was true. He had lied and betrayed me, but somehow my lie seemed like the greater crime. I had played with his need to be loved. I had listened sympathetically to his deepest, most painful secrets that he had never shared with anyone. He let me into a raw corner of his soul, and I used that to gain his trust. I sighed, too weary to parse out guilt like chits in a card game. Did it matter if my pile was bigger or his? "That was a lifetime ago, Caden. We were both different people then. We both used lies and truth for our own purposes." "What about now?" I saw him holding it out to me tentatively. Truth. A treaty written on the air between us. Was truth even possible? I wasn't sure what it was anymore, or if now was the time for it. "What is it you want, Caden? I'm not sure why you're even here." His blonde hair whipped in the wind. He squinted into the distance, but no words were forthcoming. I saw the struggle, his search for the false calm he always painted on his face. It was beyond his grasp now. "You're the one who just proposed truth," I reminded him. An anguished smile pulled at his mouth. "All those years. I didn't want to see the Komazar for what he was. He saved me from a monster, and I became just as driven as he was. I was ready to make an entire kingdom pay for the sins of my father, a man I haven't seen in over a decade. I've spent half of my life waiting for the day he would die. I blocked out the kindnesses of every person in Morrigan that I ever met, saying it didn't matter. It was the cost of war. My war. Nothing else mattered." "If you hated him so much, Caden, why didn't you just kill your father long ago? You're an assassin. For you, it would have been an easy enough matter." He cleared his throat, and his hand tightened on the reins. "Because it wasn't enough. Every time I imagined my knife slitting his throat, it didn't give me what I needed. Death was too quick. The longer I planned for the day, the more I wanted. I wanted him to suffer. No. I wanted him to watch everything he had denied me slip from his fingers one piece at a time. I wanted him to die in 100 different ways, slowly, agonizingly, day by day, the way I had when I begged on street corners, terrified that I wouldn't bring in enough to satisfy the animals he sold me to. I wanted him to feel as sharp a lash as the one he took to me."
"You said it was beggars who beat you."
"They did, but only after he laid the first marks, and those were the deepest ones."
I flinched at the cruelty he had suffered, but the horror of how long he had planned and hungered for vengeance left a sickening lump in my throat. I swallowed.
"And you still want this?"
He nodded without hesitation.
"Yes, I still wish him dead. But now there's something else that I want even more."
He turned to face me, worried lines fanning out from his eyes.
"I don't want any more innocents to die. The Komazar will spare no one. Not Pauline, Birdie, or Gwyneth. No one. I don't want them to die, Leah. And I don't want you to die."
He looked at me as if he could see death's pallor on my face already. My stomach rolled. I thought of the last words Venda had spoken to me, the missing verses someone had torn from the book. "Jezaliah, whose life will be sacrificed."
I hadn't shared that verse with anyone. Some things I had to keep tucked in secret for now. Truth was still far off for me. It's a whole kingdom in jeopardy, Caden. Not just the few you know. Two kingdoms. There are the innocents in Venda, too. My eyes stung, thinking about Aster and those who were slaughtered in the square. Yes, two kingdoms in jeopardy. Anger bubbled inside me at the scheming of the Komazar and the Council. The clans deserve more than what they've been dealt, I said. But a terrible threat grows in Venda, one that has to be stopped. I don't know how to make it all work, but I'll try. Then you'll need help. I have nothing to go back to, Leah, not as long as the Council is in power. And I'm just as hated in my birth home of Morrigan. I can't even go back to the vagabond camps anymore. If I'm with you, Caden, don't make more of it than it is, Leah. We want the same thing. I'm offering you my help. Nothing more. And there was the truth that Caden was trying to believe. Nothing more. But what I saw in his eyes was more. There was still so much need in him. It would be a difficult path for me to navigate. I didn't want to mislead or hurt him again. Still, he was offering me something I couldn't turn down. Help. And a Venden assassin in my employ was something of unquestionable value. How I would love to see the Cabinet's reaction to that, especially the Chancellor and Scholar. We want the same thing. Then tell me what you know about the Komazar's plans. Who else in the Morrigy's cabinet was he conspiring with, besides the Chancellor and Royal Scholar? He shook his head. The only one I know of is the Chancellor. The Komazar kept those details to himself. To share his key contacts would give away too much power. He only told me about the Chancellor because I had to deliver a letter to his manor once. I was 13 and the only Venden who could speak Morrigy's without an accent. I looked like any other messenger boy to the maid who answered the door. What did the letter say? It was sealed. I didn't read it, but I think it was a request for more scholars. A few months later, several arrived at the sanctum. More and more. I had been pondering just how many had conspired with the Komazar, besides the Chancellor and the Scholar. I'd been thinking about my brother's death, and was sure it wasn't a chance encounter. What was a whole Venden battalion doing so far from the border in the first place? They weren't marching on an outpost or kingdom. And as soon as my brother's company was dead, they turned around and went home. They were lying in wait, perhaps uncertain when the encounter would occur, but somehow they knew my brother's company was coming. Had word been sent ahead by someone in Morrigan? The slaughter was planned. Even when I met with the Chievdar in the valley, he never expressed surprise at running into the platoon of men. Could the treachery in Morrigan have reached even into the ranks of the military? A sudden hard gallop clipped the air. A soldier circled his horse around to my side. "Madam," the word was stiff on his tongue as if he wasn't quite sure what to call me. He strained to keep the innuendo out of his tone. It was obvious that Rafe hadn't told the captain everything yet. "Yes?" "The king wishes for you to come ride at his side. We're almost there." The king. This new reality rattled beneath my ribs. The coming days were going to be difficult for Rafe. Besides dealing with his grief, he'd be under as much scrutiny as I would be. This could change everything. Our plans. My plans. There was no way around it. I glanced back at Caden. "We'll talk more later." He nodded, and I followed the soldier to the front of the caravan. I looked at Rafe, but couldn't imagine him sitting on a throne. I could only see him on the back of a horse, a soul.